Oh, it is good. It's good to worship with you. It is good to be here with you. I have to admit that compared to a couple of weeks ago, I'm a little more mobile. I'm learning things about how my body changes as I get older. I'm reminded of that again since my daughter just turned 13 yesterday, and so I've told them I no longer have kids, I have teenagers. So it's yes. Continue to pray for that. Anyway, no, it's good. It's been good. And so it's interesting. We head into this time. Let's see if this works. I don't know if it's gonna work. You guys might need to do it for me in the back. Oh, what was that? Not sure. This is great. We get to test this right in front of you live, so you get to see how this goes. There we go. All right, so here's what we're going to do. Real quick, I just want you to turn to the person next to you. This is a Hebrew word, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, but I'll try it anyway. Shavat, okay? I want you to say, what do you think that means? Real quick, turn to the person next to you and take a guess. What do you think that word Shavat means? If you need to, if you can Google in the next 5 seconds, go ahead. You can try that, but what does it mean? Too much wine. Three seconds. Two. One. What do you think it means? Any thoughts? Any ideas? Huh? The holiday of giving. Okay, all right. Did you just Google that? Okay, interesting. What? Any other thoughts? So Shavat literally means weeks or sevens. And the way that this works out is that this is actually the third festival in the Jewish calendar. Actually, the word Pentecost is the Greek version of this, which actually is the word 50. So I'll explain in a second. So keep that in mind as you're looking at this, that this whole idea of Pentecost actually is not new within the Christian church. It actually comes from, it has very deep Jewish roots. And really, from Leviticus chapter 23, you can turn there if you want with me right now, but Leviticus chapter 23, it goes through all these different festivals that God has given them. And one of the things to recognize about the Jewish Bible, about Hebrew teaching, is this. A lot of times when we look at the Old Testament, especially if we look at Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, we look at everything that God lists in there, and we think of them as laws. We think of them as commandments. Right? We think of them as, in some cases, almost like a to-do list in some ways. And yet, if you look at them, God's intention was actually, because for a lot of the Jewish people, they thought in images. And so when you look at this, it's actually meant to be an image of something that will be fulfilled. It's meant to be an image of something else in reality that you may not notice at that moment, right? And so Sabbath, I think a few years ago we talked about Sabbath, but then we get into Passover, you know, a few weeks ago during Easter weekend, Passover was part of that tradition. The idea of when God delivered the Israelites out of Egypt just before they did, God said to them, what I want you to do is I want you to prepare this lamb, and I want you to take the blood, put it on the door frame so that the angel of death would pass over your place, because that angel would come and kill every firstborn in the nation. And so again, the idea was there's this image, the image of you put this on and the angel literally passed over. And so you have Passover, which also includes the festival of unleavened bread. Oh, I blanked it there. Right, so you have the festival of unleavened bread, and then you get to, verse 15, in chapter 23, and so notice there it says, from the day after the Sabbath, you're to count off 7 full weeks, count off 15 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath, and you present an offering of new grain to the Lord. And this is what the festival or feast of weeks or Shavat is all about. as Reverend Waugh mentioned earlier, as he read before he read this, is that this is the idea of the first fruits. In other words, there was a couple of harvest cycles. And so usually you would plant usually around March-ish or so, and there would be one series of crops that would likely around beginning of June that you would harvest, because that's what they were ready for. Others that you would leave until later on in October. But the idea was is that this first crop, you would harvest, and then out of that, in verse 16 it says there, and then present an offering of new grain to the Lord. This is what the new harvest is. And so in the midst of this, so you get to this festival. So first, sometime in March, April, depending on when how the calendar cycle worked, you would have Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and then 7 weeks later, again, that's what Shabbat means. Shabbat means weeks, right? Pentecost, 50. So 50 days later, you get to this point, to this Feast of Weeks. You know, when you get to this, what was interesting is that this was a celebration. This was meant to be a celebration that people rejoice in seeing what God's provision is was already. And so this first fruit was meant to be a celebration of, okay, we've seen what God has been faithful in so far. It's almost like a midpoint, right? It's almost like you get to this, out of this whole harvest season, you get to this midpoint of God, of seeing what God has done so far. And one of the things they would recite Psalm chapter 67. And so we're going to recite this together. This is from the Message version, okay? So we're going to read through the entire chapter. We're going to say it together. Are you ready? Okay, here we go. Ready? We're going to start in 3, 2, 1. God, mark us with grace and blessing. Smile. The whole country will see how you work. All the godless nations see how you save. God, let people thank and enjoy you. Let all people thank and enjoy you. Okay, we're going to keep going in a moment, but I'm going to ask you, as you keep reading, a little more excitement, because this is meant to be a celebration. Ready? In 3, 2, 1. Let all flung-flung people become happy and shout their happiness, because you judge them far and square. You tend the far-flung peoples. God, let people thank and enjoy you. Let all people thank and enjoy you. Earth, display your... And so this was the celebration. This was part of that festival, this feast, right? Again, feast, it was a grand celebration. And so for centuries, this image of this first fruits was being offered to God. The grain offerings from the new crop, they were being offered to God in this, and they celebrated. The people were celebrated at how God brought them through. And for centuries and centuries and centuries, this was what they had. This was the picture that God gave them. And there's a few other ones after this. We won't get into too much detail, but then a few months later, you would get into the Feast of Trumpets. And then you would have the Day of Atonement, which again, if you look at Leviticus 16, there's something unique happening there that, as one person has described, when you look at the Day of Atonement, there's actually, the way that's situated, it's actually a blending of seeing heaven and earth. And so one day, maybe we'll get into that a little bit deeper. But there's Day of Atonement, and then you get into the Feast of Booths. This was like the final harvest, usually at the end of September, early October. This is when would now take the rest of the harvest, and again, there'll be a big celebration. And so when you look at this, there's a mirroring of how some of these festivals look. Because Passover relates back to the Last Supper, right? What we call the Last Supper is actually a Passover meal. It's actually in the middle of a Passover meal. And so in the midst of this then, when you look at the Feast of Unleavened Bread, remember, what's one of the things that Jesus says based on what John recorded? Jesus says that I am the bread of life. And that this idea of unleavened bread actually relates to his death and his resurrection. And then 50 days later, we now get to what we call Pentecost. And so earlier, you've heard this read a couple of times, both from Reverend Wong and from Jenny. And so flip back to that again in Acts chapter 2. Because the day of Pentecost came. And so already in Jerusalem, this is celebration. Already people are, this is a festival that they've been a part of all along. And on this particular day, on the Shavuot, on the day of Pentecost, you still have people celebrating. In the midst of that, so the disciples are in one place. And all of a sudden, sound of a blowing of a violent wind came from heaven and filled the whole house while they were sitting there. They saw what seemed to be tongues of fire that had separated and came to rest on each of them. All of them were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other tongues as the Spirit enabled them. And so you heard this read earlier about how people were just listening to this. And again, because this is one of the major festivals, you have people all over the Roman Empire come to Jerusalem. You have people from every parts of the world come. And The diaspora came from all over, and because they lived in all these other places, they all came from these different languages, different customs, different cultures, and they all came to Jerusalem because this was mandated as part of the Jewish tradition, that on this is one of the festivals you would come to Jerusalem and you would celebrate these first fruits. In the midst of this, people started hearing. It was interesting because when they say that, you know, they were bewildered because they were wondering, these are all Galileans, right? Verse 7, aren't all these speaking Galileans? Because Galileans were not known for their intellect. Galileans were not exactly known to be smart people, right? In our North American context, it's kind of like if to use a Jeff Foxworthy term, it's like if you were called a redneck, right? If you were considered a redneck, you were considered not very smart. You were considered kind of very simple in the way that in terms of your intellect, right? It's almost as if you were translating to North American terms, and it's like, aren't these all like rednecks, and yet they're speaking all these languages? You wouldn't expect this. And so people are hearing this, and what are they decreeing in verse 11? We hear them declaring the wonders of God in their own tongues. So it wasn't just about, you know, we have to, for all these converts to Judaism, and for some of them, maybe especially those who were not Jewish and were converted to Judaism, they are now trying to learn the Jewish language, right? I don't know about you, I am not very good at learning Hebrew at all. And so, but that's what a lot of them were doing, coming from all these different places, they're all learning, and all of a sudden, in the midst of the celebration, in the midst of seeing what God's provision is in this first grain of crops, in the midst of all that, they start hearing, hold on a second, someone's actually telling me the wonders of God in a language that I can understand. So why not juxtapose it this way? If you go back to Genesis chapter 11, and some of you might remember this, right? This is what's part of the story called the Tower of Babel. And just to recap history as much as we can in 30 seconds or less, you know, after creation starts, after Adam and Eve fall, and then after all this, after sin kind of entrenched itself in humanity, and after God wipes out the earth with a flood, and Noah re-begins the human race, but even then, sin continues to have its entrenchment in humanity. It gets to this point in chapter 11, because after the flood and everything, you know, we read that story in Genesis chapter 11, how the people got together and they said, well, why don't we build a tower to get to heaven, essentially, right? This is one artist's rendition of what this could have been. I mean, it's not like we had photographic evidence of what this was like. But this idea was this tower, you know, and then if you look at the story, God says, you know, if we allow the people to reach to us, you know, it's almost like as if they think they're going to be like God. It's this issue again that they think they're like God. So we're going to scatter them by using different languages, because actually, if you go back to Genesis chapter 1, God says, I want you to go out into the earth, right, and to be stewards of it. I want you to go out and take care of it. I want you to go out and actually show my grace and compassion and to live together in that way throughout all the earth. Not this kind of re-centralization into one location. What was interesting is that there's a guy named Jeff Hulse. I'm not good with names today. I don't know why. But he's a prof in Northern Seminary. And this is one of his quotes. He says, instead of being representative of God throughout the world, those in Babel want to be God in one singular place. And this is where the oppression comes. Because one of the things that he says is this, in this article. He says, if you go back to this, okay, the construction of this, especially back in those days, it's not like the skyscrapers you see in Toronto. It's not like unionized forces that you hire at a decent pay and they have all these rights and all this kind of stuff. No, this is, a lot of times, buildings back then, these kinds of projects, it was forced labor. It was essentially slave labor. And so this is what he says. He says, and this is where the oppression comes in. People don't usually build towers like that back in the day. They were forced to build them. And who was forced? Enslaved people. He actually goes on in that article to say, and if you notice, one of the things that usually happens in that kind of dominance is that whatever other cultural elements you bring into that are now wiped out. They try to squash any kind of differences in order to have what he would call forced unity. And so he goes on to say, when we relate it back to Pentecost, the gospel is for all people and all nations, not so each of these can turn into some generic humanity, but that they could express the human blessing and mandate to multiply and fill the earth, so that in the end, people from every tribe and nation could come and worship the Lamb. And so his juxtaposition here is that if you look at the Tower of Babel story, this idea that people were almost trying to be forced into this monoethnicity, that the intention was is that with Pentecost, it was meant to continue to fulfill Genesis 1, to go out into the earth and to be stewards of it. And so when you go to Acts chapter 2 now, remember what I said? These are images. And so for centuries, the image during the Feast of Weeks was this idea of, here are the first fruits, God. You've been faithful in providing for us, right? And we bring these first fruits, this first crop, to you as an offering. What's happening in reality now is God has sent his Holy Spirit so that his word would go out, and that these people now were the first fruits of God's mission, of what Jesus came to do through his death and resurrection. Because of his death and resurrection, we can now actually bring the person and message of Jesus in every language. This was the first fruits. And from there, as you read later, right, Peter preaches, and then 3,000 more people come. They come to believe in Jesus. And it expands and expands and expands to Caesarea, to Rome, to every part of the Roman Empire. And a few centuries later, to Brampton. See, the first fruits that God presented during Pentecost is still being lived out now. And if anything, Pentecost is meant to be this. How are you bringing the person and message of Jesus to people around you in whatever language they speak? Not just whatever language, but almost whatever means possible, so that they would know the wonders of God. So this is more than just, do you speak a different language? If you do, great, right? So if you know your neighbor speaks a certain language and you learn that, great, that's one way. And so if that's one way for you to share the message and person of Jesus in that language, in that spoken language, that's one way. You know, some of you are very visually based, right? Some of you are probably hooked into Instagram and Snap and all this other stuff. You know, what ways would you communicate the person and message of Jesus through that? How would you utilize a meme? How would you utilize some kind of image so that when you share it through when you instant it and people see it, would they see the wonders of God in that? When you're at work and you're talking to your neighbor and you're expressing in a certain, and you're talking about certain subjects and you're hearing the not just the language, the physical language, but you're also hearing the nuances of what makes sense to them, how do you then bridge the wonders of God to them? I love Mark's analogy earlier, right? Talking about the raptors. I mean, you got people who are camped there right now in tents. And what does it mean to go to them and say, you're thrilled about this? Take that energy. You know what you experience in that moment? You know, for some of you who probably watched, you know, game four a couple of nights ago, and the whole relief and excitement and all that kind of stuff, take that, and God says, would you want to experience what I have for you? So how would you translate that? How would you take some of the experiences that people have and actually see what you're feeling there, that joy, that excitement, God actually has for you through Jesus? I mean, even through our own day-to-day living, even how you present your own body language, right? Like, how many of us, when we read Psalm 67, are willing to shout it out and say, enjoy, honor God, because it's so entrenched in you? Is it actually entrenched in you? I mean, this is part of this whole idea of the Feast of Pentecost. Is not just this experience in a certain point of history when the Holy Spirit came and everyone is also speaking different languages. That's great. But just like what it means, it's the first fruits. It was only meant to be the beginning. The question is, how is it being fulfilled until we get to the point when the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Booths come, when the final harvest comes, and we really get to celebrate because that's when Jesus comes. So how are you translating? How are you bringing the person and message of Jesus to the people around you? To your classmate that you're sitting next to? What way would it make sense? Whether it's a digital form, whether it's something that you say in person, even some ways that you present, some act of kindness, whatever it is, what is it that helps, that would help them to begin to see the wonders of God? I don't know what that means in your life. I really don't. I don't know what that could look like in your life, but that's one of the things that you guys start asking about. What are the ways that I take the person and message of Jesus, and how can I share in such a way that it makes sense to that person? Right? In academic circles, this is called cultural intelligence. What does it mean to actually look at another culture and be able to bring whatever you're trying to say into that culture so that it makes sense to them? And so that's in everywhere. That's not just when you do overseas mission trips or anything like that. This happens now. This happens with the people inside your own household. I'm still trying to figure out with my kids, what's the best way for me to help them to see and understand the wonders of God? Because how my boy understands it will be different from how my girl understands it. So therefore, how do I help translate the person and message of Jesus to each one in such a way that it resonates with who they are? So your best friend, how do you help bring the message and purpose of Jesus to them so that it translates and resonates with who they are? And that will take work. It won't always be simple, but this is why God sent the Holy Spirit. So that with the Holy Spirit, you can actually do that. Because Jesus has already made it possible through his death and resurrection so that we can be cleansed and we can be redeemed, and so that the Holy Spirit can actually say, here's how I want you to do it. Now, would you take the time to listen to me so that we can do this together? The fact is that this is not over. The feast, the Pentecost, is just a mere beginning. Pentecost is the first fruits, but now it's up to us to continue to do what Pentecost was meant to do. And so, Holy Spirit, we ask. We ask that as you did so many centuries ago with those people in Acts chapter 2, how you were able to help them to express what you want us to see, God, in knowing Jesus in whatever way it's possible. Help us, Holy Spirit, to see what that means. Help us, Holy Spirit, to embrace the creativity, to maybe see things that we've never noticed before, so that the people around us may begin to resonate with your wonders. Because indeed, God, you are wonderful. You are worth sharing. More than anything else in our life, God, I ask and I hope that what you have for us would be so entrenched in us that is what would shine out, that is what would be shared ultimately. And so we thank you that your first fruits were done through your people so many centuries ago. And you've entrusted it to us now. Help us to be faithful in that, we ask. In your name, Jesus.